Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
Football Weekly. In today's show, Premier League. Man United's title chances damaged at the bridge and John Terry dealt the blow. Well, they say it is a family tradition. With Chelsea 5 points clear, we round up the latest at the top of the league and at the bottom where Phil Brown's Hull get a win, but is their future still orange? Elsewhere, there's the latest from the continent. Holland, Germany, France, Spain and Italy. The Madrid derby, Willy warming shorts, a 10-day training camp and what Steve Stan Staunton did next. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly. Well, hello everybody, and after Thursday's wildly successful twirling dots video presentation, today's Football Weekly coming to you in a scratch and sniff format with the help of Barry Glendening.
Hi.
Hi, Barry. Did you have a nice weekend?
It was all right.
Yeah.
It was different.
You went beagling, didn't you?
I was beagling, yeah.
What does that mean?
It means you stand in a field.
It's not dogging, is it? Let's just clear that up. Right?
No, very much not dogging.
Cut price dogging.
Emphatically not dogging. I had a social faux pas because I said to a master of hounds, I asked him some question about his dogs.
Right.
And was just sniffily told, they're not dogs, they're hounds. So anyway, yeah, I was down in Devon, down the country, and Mrs. Baz's folks are sort of horsey country folk, and it was the start of the hunting season, apparently. So I got to go to one farm and drink brandy at 10:30 in the morning, which is always great, and watch an 8-year-old boy get thrown off a horse and start to cry, which was quite amusing. And then I went beagling, which is following hounds, beagles specifically, around a field as they try to kill either a rabbit or a hare. I'm not. One's right. Legal, the other isn't. So they were trying to catch the one that's
the legal.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how to tell the difference because I can't really tell. I think, does a hare have black tips on its ears and no tail or something like
that's
that?
That's one for the listeners, I think. Meantime, also on board today, James Dart.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
On board today, you saw some. I was going to make an analogy about chasing people around the field and stuff, but it was going to be about Chelsea, Man United. But you saw, anyway, and then next to you, I'm very well actually. In answer to your question, John Ashdown.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hiya.
Big weekend of FA Cup for you.
Yeah, I spent the weekend in tiny football grounds in Cheshire and Somerset.
Right,
and I'm actually far colder now than I was for those 90
minutes.
Well,
it's near Earth orbit for you. Listen,
see, that's because there's no hot TV lamps in the studio to keep them warm. So it's very much after the Lord Mayor's show today, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
No, just producer Ben on his own in the box instead of the 25 assistants that were there the other night.
Mm. Indeed, so. Apologies to you if you weren't able to access our stream.
Congratulations.
And if you were wondering what it was that Barry unveiled to our delight midway through the podcast, well, it was a I Belong to Jimbo t-shirt, lovingly prepared by Mrs. Baz, and in proper retro Kaká style as well.
So yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. Nice. Anyway, listen, I'll press on then. Chelsea, Man United, it was the big game of the weekend, a little bit on the dull side, but it's put Chelsea 5 points clear now. There was lots of blah, blah, blah about referees afterwards, and plenty of people said that Man United perhaps were the better side. But were they really? Did they deserve to win that game, James Dart?
They were the better side, and Chelsea won very, very ugly, as you do if you're going to go and win championships. It wasn't the greatest game in the world. United will probably feel aggrieved. I think a lot of big decisions did go against them. Not necessarily decisions that would have cost them 3 points, I don't think, because there weren't that many chances at either end.
Specifically, the free kick which led to the goal.
Yeah, very dubious.
Yeah, that one did kind of lead.
And I think in the first half there was some sort of hand-wringing from Sir Alex Ferguson regarding a foul on, I think, was it Antonio Valencia, went down in the box. And he could have potentially had a shout for a penalty there, but it just was it wasn't the greatest entertainment fest, but Chelsea came away with the 3 points, and at the end of it, that's all that really matters to them.
Right. Bottom line for Manchester United is a little bit like in the Liverpool game. They look solid enough, but where were the chances?
I think the stat is that it's 1 point in their last six games against the big four teams.
Away.
And that makes just, I think, as you come to...
Not six away games.
No, sorry, no. Yeah. That's right. And what you have now is that you've got Sir Alex Ferguson coming out lambasting the referee's performance again, and it was poor and probably deserved a certain amount of lambasting, but what it does is it deflects away from his own team's potential shortcomings in that just didn't really create enough.
You're suggesting that he takes on the referees to distract attention from his own team's shortcomings? Well, interesting idea.
He had a point about the position of the referee. Because the thing he described was as absolutely ridiculous was whether if he was standing after the free kick, and he was in a terrible position. But at the same time, you know, it's getting boring, isn't it? He whinges on and whinges on, and people just go, oh, yeah, he's doing it again. And even the FA today have said, oh, no, sorry, they've let him off, not going to charge him. Oh, just doing it again, isn't it?
It comes almost like you say, it's the boy who cried wolf a little bit in that respect. And now that people are so used to it and expecting it in this situation, that when it's actually probably quite warranted, it sort of gets swept away like
that. You say ugly, and you mentioned, you know, refereeing injustice, but what blew my mind while watching the game was the Johnny Evans Drogba incident, when Johnny Evans went in extremely hard with his studs on Drogba's chest. What was the expression used for Drogba's legs afterwards?
He got the Jimmy legs.
He got the Jimmy legs. It was a brutal challenge, and entirely intentional, to my mind, after which, and he then stuck in his leg again as the two players were coming to earth, just for, he had another little poke, after which a referee produces a yellow card, but it wasn't for Johnny Evans, it was for Drogba. For what exactly?
I don't know. You likened this, Chris Rea wrote a song about this, apparently. Yeah.
I was watching this with my 8-year-old boy who, you know, if the game hadn't been traumatising enough, that we were both shocked and outraged. And you try explaining to, you know, a year 4 child exactly how this fits into the supposedly moral universe we inhabit. You can't. And Chris Rea, of course, one of the many great songs he's written was Tell Me There's a Heaven, in which his little girl was reacting to similarly worrying news on the television. And was asking for confirmation from father that there was a system of justice.
But I bet you the news she was watching on the television wasn't as funny as Didier Drogba getting kung fu kicked in the chest. I mean, some decisions did go against Manchester United, but for neutral observers and Chelsea fans, it's just comical because they get so many decisions in their favour. It's nice to see the shoe on the other foot for once.
And you feel they should do better, and perhaps they are beginning to show their limitations this year. But Chelsea, meantime, good news for them, along with the win, was the fact that their transfer ban has been... Is it suspended or entirely revoked?
Suspended, pending an appeal.
Oh.
So they can stock up on players, do a big trolley dash in January, and then if it's reinstated, they'll at least have some cover. But Carlo Ancelotti has said that he's kind of happy with the players he has at the moment, but I'm sure they will buy somebody during the January transfer window.
No, right.
The tranny transfer window.
The tranny, yes.
Oh, wow. I don't know if they've got a transfer ban on that situation.
Eddie Izzard. Top cross-dressing comedian.
Yes. Now, in the meantime, Arsenal continuing to shadow Chelsea from a safe distance. They kind of took Wolves apart. It has been said the kind of game they used to lose, i.e. played up north. So is this a sign of growing maturity among the young Gunners? Discuss.
Yeah, possibly, isn't it? I mean,
36 goals in 11 matches, John Ashdown.
Well, it is impressive, and Wolves gave them the opportunity to do that, as Mick McCarthy pointed out late last week. He basically decided that attack was the only way to go against Arsenal. And he did. He did line up 4-4-2 and had a bit of a go at them. And they paid. Well, sorry, you could say they paid the price. But if they'd sat back, you know, it might have been just as bad. Mm. Arsenal do. I mean, it's important for Arsenal. They win on the road. They've won every game at the Emirates this season in the league, and have been slightly less impressive away. I think Sunderland are next up after the international break, away from home, which would be a tough one. And then it's Chelsea at the end of the month.
Ooh.
At the Emirates, which could be the acid test.
I think Arsenal were, I mean, they're given a 2-goal start with 2 own goals. They were quite fortunate in that respect, and then they could do what they like when they got into that position. And I was quite intrigued why Eduardo decided to celebrate unveiling a T-shirt or a vest below his shirt after the second goal. Right. He refused to celebrate like that after the first goal, which is an own goal, but the second one, which is even more ludicrous as a goal, he thought that was okay for him to claim and celebrate as his own. That was quite stupid. And also because he totally, completely ballsed up what should have been an easy 2-on-1 situation to score anyway, and it needed a ludicrous deflection to give it.
All right. Nice. Liverpool play Monday night, of course, against Birmingham. Meanwhile, Man City, ever since Barry, you kind of surveyed or canvassed opinion as to whether they were title challengers, the wheels have well and truly come off. 5 straight draws now. Sunday, when did they play Burnley? Saturday.
Saturday afternoon, yeah.
Saturday, they were up against one of the poorest teams in the Premier League, who who hadn't got a point and barely scored any goals away from home, and went to Eastlands and they had that 3-3 draw. No, what was it? 1-1. 3-3 draw. What's going wrong then?
I think defensively, I mean, their shortcomings are quite myriad at the moment. I mean, you had Lescott hasn't been playing fantastically well for City, and Wainbridge, I think, and Alan Hudson actually did a very good job on Match of the Day of tearing him a proverbial new one, in that he just called him out for being for an awful display, and he played absolutely terribly.
Yeah.
Burnley showed fantastic, fantastic credit to them to come back after being pegged back from 2-0 up to be trailing 3-2 and to come back and score that third goal, which was a beautiful finish in the end. Lovely layoff by, I think, Stephen Fletcher. And yeah, it was their first point in the Premier League and first point in the top flight since, I think, the 70s or something.
In an away game, yeah. You mentioned the £60 million back line not doing exactly what you'd think it might, but up front they're not really shining either, are they?
Well, I think, I mean, it's inevitable that a club like this, when they spend all that kind of money, they're going to be under this kind of scrutiny when they draw five games in a row and drop, what is that, 10 points in five games against teams that they should really be beating if they're going to be considered as a potential top four team. And if that's either at the players or at Mark Hughes, I think they both have to come under the microscope.
Meanwhile, at the bottom, just to conclude part one, all sorts of excitement. Hull, Jimmy Bullard back. And that late winner, and there you are, a victory. So, you know, one of the principal accusations against Phil Brown was the fact that he spunked, in the colloquial argot, £5 million or so of club's money on Crystal Need midfielder. But perhaps it wasn't such a bad decision after all. Is he going to stay now, James? Is he?
I still think Phil Brown will leave. Even though he's, I just get the sense that even after winning yesterday, he sort of spurned the post-match press conference, leaving it for Brian Houghton. I still think it was also over the weekend that his sort of stonewalling no comments in the wake of the lady
Jumpergate.
And I just get the feeling with the new chairman, Adam Pearson on board, and Adam Pearson being very close personal friends, I'm led to believe, with Alan Kirbishley.
Right.
I don't think I'm going doing too much detective work to probably think that there's a fair chance that Phil Brown, even with that win, is still going to be finding new employment.
Houghton did one of the things that really annoys me about football managers' post-match press conferences. Somebody asked him, does this result mean that this saved Brown's job? And Houghton said, oh, I'm not going to answer those sort of stupid questions. And it's not a stupid question. It's the only question. It's the only question that anybody wants to know the answer. And even if you can't give an answer, it's the only question that can be asked.
I think if you don't ask that question, then you're just slagging off the journalists for saying, well, have the balls and ask that question in that situation.
Absolutely.
But credit to them. And they played very well yesterday, and Bullard was good. But they were lucky when they were 1-0 down. They almost went 2 down with an own goal, potentially. Magic made a fantastic save, didn't know much about it. That turned the game, really.
Well, also, the referee put the fire out of, you know, there's a bit of a play on words going here, with a couple of, certainly one yellow card for Abdelifier that really wasn't warranted, which certainly hurt Stoke. But you were mentioning the international break, of course, and this is the traditional time to get a new manager in, give them a little bit of time to work. West Ham also down in the drop zone, of course, now. One or two problems there at Upton Park. Are you worried about their future this season?
Well, financially, they're still in a bit of a mess, aren't they? So I don't think there's a great deal of funds for changing the squad around.
Yeah.
So, I didn't think they would struggle, but they really do look vulnerable. They've been in the bottom three for most of the season. And losing at home to an Everton side that aren't quite firing yet is a worrying result, yeah.
Yeah.
And the only money that they might have possibly had on players is they're going to have to spend it on Alan Kirbishley after he won his wrongful dismissal case again.
How much are you going to get from that?
I don't know. It could run into seven figures, possibly.
Yeah. Well, they owe the Blades £5 million a season as well. So yeah. It all adds up.
Crikey. Well, there you go. That is it for part one. And the excitement just gets ramped up further and further after this musical interlude when we dial up our top pal in Spain, Sid Lowe.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Hello.
Ah, hey. Hi, Sid, and welcome to part two of this week's Football Weekly. You're in where, Madrid, are you?
No, I'm in Valencia Airport.
Ah, how come?
Because I've been in Valencia this morning talking to David Silva.
All right, how is he, eh?
He was all right, yeah, he was okay.
Always a lot of transfer talk about David Silva.
Well, that's part of the problem, I think. That's one of the reasons why, although he's okay, he's very very careful with what he says.
Right, okay. Well, they just had a big win, of course, against Zaragoza. featuring the first one-handed player to play in the league. I know this because I read your blog this morning.
Yeah, I've actually just walked past the the Zaragoza team here at Valencia Airport.
Right.
Sadly, Jermaine Pennant's not among them because he's injured, so I didn't get a chance to.
But was Alex Sanchez there?
I couldn't see him.
Right.
I was looking, to be honest, out of curiosity, but I couldn't see him. So I'm sure he was there, but in a crowd of kind of 20 odd people in tracksuits, so I didn't notice him.
Right. Producer Ben had the fader down, thankfully, when Barry said maybe he was waving at you, Sid. That's
I shouldn't laugh, should
no,
I?
No, I don't think any of us should. And well done to Alex Sanchez for overcoming his unfortunate disability type thing to be a professional in the field. Now, the Madrid derby, Sid. Speaking of the disabled and that, Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid.
Yeah, it's just getting silly now. Atletico Madrid, who last time they beat Real Madrid was over a decade ago. They went down that season, so they paid for beating Real Madrid. They went down that season. Since they came back up, they haven't been able to beat Real Madrid. And I was sad enough, and I admit this is pretty sad, to spend about 2 hours yesterday going through every single Real Madrid result in every game they've played since Atletico Madrid last beat them.
A decade of Real Madrid results?
Yeah, and came up with a list, I think I'm right in saying there's 59 teams on that. And actually, I think there's 62 teams on that list. 62 teams have beaten Real Madrid since Atletico Madrid last managed to.
Right. Well, as you mentioned in your list, which you partially reprint in your blog, Alcorcon, of whatever it is, the fourth division or something, are one of the most recent examples thereof. But you make the point that that defeat might turn out to be the best thing that ever happened to Real manager Pellegrini, because it allowed him to ditch Raul and Guti, and without Raul in the side, they're starting to look a much more settled lineup, and Kaká's actually playing in the right place.
Yeah, it's possibly a little unfair to say this and possibly a little facile to say this, but one of Madrid's biggest problems, possibly their biggest problem for a while now, has been Raul. And that's not to say that Raul himself plays awfully, because he doesn't always play awfully. He's had two or three games this season where in fact he's been really, really good. But the problem with Raul is that he needs to play just behind the striker. And of course, Real Madrid is a squad because of the nature of the way the Galactico system works, because of the nature of the kind of players they've bought consistently over the last, probably I'd go so far as to say pretty much over the last decade. I mean, the squad's absolutely packed with players whose natural position is behind the striker, and they can't take up that position because of Raul. When Raul's there, it seems to throw everything else out of kilter. For example, you've got Kaká, who can't play in the position he wants to play in. You've got the fact that the entire team is slowed down by Raul because he simply can't play at the pace of other players anymore. And since he's been out of the side, which is the last three games, and admittedly it's too early to be drawing really, really clear conclusions, but certainly against Getafe, against Atletico Madrid at the weekend, and of course above all against AC Milan, they look like a better side, and more than anything else they look like a much more logical side. It makes much more sense the way they're setting things up. I think there's other things as well that came out of that Alcorcon game, probably a belief in Manuel Pellegrini that he no longer needs to rotate quite so much, that he doesn't need to be changing the side every week, but certainly it's starting to look now like the Alcorcon defeat could have been the best thing that happened to him. And I've just read now, and I'm devastated that I didn't see this particular stat before I wrote the column, but I think it's an amazing statistic. From the 80th minute to the 95th, because the game obviously went into additional play, 80th to 95th, 15 minutes, my maths is bad, but not that bad, Real Madrid had 45 seconds of possession.
Wow.
And they really were desperately under the cosh for the last 15 minutes when Atletico Madrid suddenly seemed to believe in themselves. Now, admittedly, there's a series of extenuating circumstances there. One of them is the fact that Real Madrid had Sergio Ramos sent off, so they're down to 10 men. That meant a couple of things. That meant sending someone on into left back, which was Marcelo, who'd been playing him in left midfield, and we all know that Marcelo can't defend to save his life. It also meant that obviously a man down as well. Raul was on the pitch, so there was no outlet ball, no pace, no nothing, and Sergio Aguero had come on, and although he was injured, Atletico Madrid fans are now pointing at Kike Sanchez-Flores and saying, hang on a minute, this guy's got to play every minute of every game, because Aguero was once again, as he'd been against Chelsea, absolutely brilliant and almost turned it round, because Atletico had been pathetic for the best part of an hour and they were absolutely superb for the last 15 or 20 minutes.
In which they had more possession than one of John Terry's family, allegedly. But tell us about, you mentioned Sergio Aguero. Sorry. You mentioned Sergio Aguero there. Apparently he's wearing some pretty fancy kit these days. Hey, Sid.
Yeah, I love this story. As always happens when it's the build-up to the derby, they dedicate so much space to it in Marca and Athens. far more space than they can genuinely find stories for. So they normally pack it with all sorts of crap, and year after year they do double-page spreads of things where they ask for predictions from people who are famous or even not very famous and stuff like that. But one of them in the build-up to this derby was basically an entire page, which was just an advert for a sportswear brand, who I'm not going to name because I just can't believe that they got away with this. And it was an advert about how Kun Aguero had these special undershorts which kept everything nice and warm.
Is that an important thing? Had that been an issue with him, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but clearly it mattered enough to dedicate it an entire page. And this, of course, is in a newspaper that won't even give a quarter of a page to most match reports of a weekend.
But Sid, your sort of equipment hangs outside for a reason, doesn't it? So could the wearing of these special pants possibly harm his chances of siring another grandchild for Diego Maradona?
Well, not being that kind of doctor, I really couldn't give you an answer. I do not know if aforementioned pants by keeping your bits too warm or maybe even pushing them back inside could be dangerous. I just don't know the answer.
I like the sound of them, though.
I think we need some in the pod. It's very, very cold in here. I've already mentioned that. I'm going to keep banging on about it.
It is quite fresh. Sid, listen, just finally then, I see there's a bit of a storm brewing about that fellow Cristiano Ronaldo and his injury. The Portuguese have only gone and named him in their squad for the playoff with... who are they playing?
Bosnia.
Yeah. And the best thing about this is
that
when you say the Portuguese, what's more important in all of this, of course, is that the person who's named him in his squad is Carlos Queiroz. Mm. Now, if ever there is a man that everybody in Madrid hates, it's Carlos Queiroz. I think, personally, he's been very unfairly saddled with the blame for the collapse of the Galactico project during the first season that David Beckham was in Madrid. But it certainly is true that since he left Madrid, he's been quite bitter about his treatment there, I would say, in truth, with some justification. But he's now seen as the coach that not only was rubbish, but since then has proven to be desperately ungrateful for Real Madrid for giving him the wonderful job of having run their team and run their team into the ground for a season. So now everybody's saying it's not just that Portugal want Cristiano Ronaldo to play a vital World Cup qualifier. It's one thing that people seem to have kind of lost sight of in the Madrid press. But they're saying... it's Queiroz. He's trying to screw us again. He's coming for us. And Queiroz, I think, is actually quite rightly saying, I'm going to call Cristiano Ronaldo up so our doctors can have a look at him. There is a suspicion, it appears, in the Portuguese FA that Real Madrid might not be playing exactly straight on all of their statements about Cristiano Ronaldo's injury because they saw him training on Friday and Real Madrid had claimed he wasn't going to do anything for 2 weeks.
So there's witch doctors in Peru. That did some good then, did it?
Well, they try to balance out against Pepe el Brujo.
They gathered outside the Spanish embassy in Lima and they scattered some coca leaves and they had a nice gingerbread man who was kind of pinned to a poster of Ronaldo, and it's very, very effective. It's not.
It wasn't Gary Megson, was it?
No. No, indeed not. Well, that's fascinating, Sid. So you think Ronaldo... ooh, that sounds like someone's leaving on a jet plane.
Hang on. That's the last call for flight going somewhere. I can't quite make out where it's going.
All
but
right.
Luckily, it's not my flight. So
all right, good. Listen, fantastic stuff as ever, Sid. And we look forward to speaking to you on Thursday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Bon voyage. Around the rest of Europe, Sid Lowe in Spain there, of course. Germany, Bayern, further problems for them. They've dropped to eighth now in the Bundesliga. Ouch. They had a 1-1 draw at home to Schalke. Luca Toni got subbed off at half-time, Barry, and was so incensed he got into his car, drove home at half-time. So there's a disciplinary proceedings in the works for him. Bayer Leverkusen's 3 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga, since you ask, after their 4-0 demolition of Eintracht Frankfurt. They scored 3 goals in the first 11 minutes. There were 5 goals in the final 12 minutes of the extraordinary clash between Lyon and Marseille over in Ligue 1. A 5-5 draw, this one finished. As I say, half of those goals coming in the last bit. Sorry, Barry, you watched these on YouTube, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I watched them this morning. The eventual equaliser was a Toulala own goal. But yeah, it looked really exciting. And Didier Deschamps, the Marseille manager, said, you know, while it must have been an enjoyable spectacle for the crowd, he didn't enjoy it one bit. Mm. And to be fair, Marseille really did throw it away. Their goalkeeper had an absolute shocker.
Oh, really? Mm. Mm. Lyon, who, of course, carry Liverpool's Champions League hopes in their hands when they visit Fiorentina in a couple of weeks' time. They are now 1 point behind Bordeaux, who appeared weary and clueless against Lille, it says here. So there you go, all very exciting in Ligue 1. And meantime in Holland, for Mika Atomica, says, can we mention Steve McLaren's 20, who beat Ajax? McLaren for the Liverpool job, suggests for Mika Atomica. They are actually top of the Eredivisie, 2 points clear of PSV.
Why would McLaren want to take a step down at this stage of his career?
You don't know the trouble you're causing, eh? You do, don't you?
Yeah, fair comment. Yeah.
Right. Internationals, of course, coming up next weekend. And Barry, you've got some exciting information about the world of international football.
It's very exciting. Guardian Sport is, which is us, mm-hmm. sort of which we are...
for now, anyway.
Yes, is looking to build a community of supporters for each of the 32 countries that qualify for the World Cup finals. Mm. So basically, we often get people in our blog saying they expect better from the Guardian, that we're all rubbish, we don't know what we're doing. So now is their big chance to prove that they can do better than us.
For free?
Probably. I don't really know the details. But, basically, Guardian Sport looking to build a community of fans for each of the 32 countries that qualify for the 2000 World Cup, starting with the draw next season or next month and continuing through to the tournament itself and its conclusion.
What will this community do? What will it be? Will it be a virtual community?
Well, it says here that we'll provide more details of what we're looking for and the benefits of belonging to our fans' community to those that make the grade. So anyone who's interested, if you email certain information to worldcup2010@guardian.co.uk, basically go on the website and there's a story about how you can get involved and take our jobs.
Now, part three, all sorts of excitement, FA Cup, the Championship talk. First off, though, Paolo Bandini with the latest on Serie A.
Hello.
Hi, Paolo.
It's good to see that everyone's naked in here again now the cameras are gone.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of cameras, Barry, you'd just like to point out that your look of ennui on Thursday was entirely for the camera's benefit, yeah?
Yes.
Not everyone got the joke.
Yeah. Funny that.
Right. And you've been practicing it for the last 4 years.
I have it down to a T. That's why it was so convincing.
Right. Okay, super. Well, there was nothing boring about this week. Well, there were one or two boring things, but Roma-Inter wasn't a great game. But tell us more, anyway, about the Serie A weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, the top of the table headline is that Inter drew against Roma, and therefore it's back to just a five-point gap at the top of the table now for Juventus, which I think is probably not worth getting carried away about. I mean, I think that possibly the more interesting story at the moment is the one developing at Lazio, where they've now lost, they have lost, I think, 4 out of 5, and they haven't won in 10 games. They opened the game, they opened the season by winning the Super Cup, and then they won the first games of the season, and since then they've picked up 5 points in 10 games, and they're all over the place, which is sort of all the more troubling for President Claudio Lotito, because he is the one who decided that several players were not going to be involved this season, which is becoming a massive issue, really.
Well, he keeps doing this at Lazio, throwing people out of the squad because they won't accept wage reductions.
Yeah.
And it's, as you say, backfiring a bit. Goran Pandev, who's traditionally one of their strongest strikers, is now involved in a I'm suing you, no, you're suing me tussle in the courts.
Yeah, and he's not the only one, actually. Cristian Ledesma is also doing the same. And Ledesma actually had more games and played in more games last season than anyone else for Lazio. It's just become a real thing. I mean, Pandev is a little bit of a different case because Pandev has been underpaid for a few years and has said basically at the beginning of the summer, right, I'm seeing out my contract and then I'm going if you don't sell me this summer. And so Lazio, I suppose, maybe might feel a bit more aggrieved about his stance on things. Ledesma actually basically said in the summer, I'm getting paid €500,000 a year and I want more. And they offered him more and he said, well, I think I'm worth even more than that. And he started sort of flirting with other teams. But then he came back and said, OK, I'll take what you offered me. But because he hadn't said yes straight away, Lotito said, fine, you didn't say yes straight away. You can't have what we offered you before anymore. So essentially they sort of offered him something. And then because he didn't say yes straight away, they took it away again. Now he's sort of been training. He spent the first month of the season training like by his manager's own admission, a model professional. And then even now they're in trouble and things aren't going well for them, they're basically still refusing to use him. So he's finally said, fine, I'm going to follow Pandev and try and get my contract with
him. It's extraordinary. The court case, I think, begins today between Lazio and Pandev. They're suing him because he said, I don't have any more stimulus at this club. And they're saying, okay, that's breach of contract.
Yeah, basically. Because basically they've realised that he might have a case about them sort of, for, you know, saying, you know, because then they're basically with Pandev and Ledesma, they haven't just not played them and taken them off your opening list, they've not let them train with the main team, and therefore I think Lazio have realised he may have a case, and so now that they're trying to launch counteraction. Of course, this being Italy, neither of these court cases will be resolved until sometime around 2020. So
I got a question about court cases in a second, actually. Lazio meantime are, I think, fifth from bottom, are they? They're in a relegation scrap. And the remaining players, after they got beaten 2-1 by Milan at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome on Sunday, Milan thus moving up to third place now. They've rocketed up the table.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, actually, because they did a little chart in Gazzetta, and actually, after seven games, Milan and Lazio are on the same points.
Ooh.
And now Milan are third, and Lazio have picked up 2 points since that game.
So. Wow. Well, the remaining Lazio players have been stuck into, or will on Wednesday, begin a 10-day punitive training camp.
Yeah, except those who are lucky enough to go on international duty.
Right, okay.
Can't keep them there.
No, you can't, I suppose. No. And Zdenek Zeman, he was in the crowd at the Stadio Olimpico, so there's been a little bit of talk about him maybe taking over from the manager Ballardini.
Yeah, the only thing that's difficult for Lotito now is that Ballardini all along has basically supported this stance on all the players and said, oh no, I'm just not playing them because they're, you know, troublemakers, so I don't want to play them.
Mm.
Whereas it's clearly Lotito's decision. The problem is when he sacks Ballardini, he's then got to find another manager who's willing to not play good players just because of a little, you know, crusade he's on.
Could be Sinisa Mihajlovic, could it?
Well, yes, Sinisa Mihajlovic, that retiring wallflower.
Paolo Bandini, whose Serie A blog can be read now, actually, at guardian.co.uk/football, which is a great place to post your comments on Football Weekly. Jammy Bastard says, here's the real question I want to know. What's the pod play, FIFA 10 or PES? That's Pro Evo 2010.
I've always been a Pro Evo man, really.
Pro Evo over here as well.
Pro Evo 5 is where I'm stuck at on my old Xbox, I'm afraid.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
I haven't got the new Pro Evo 10, but I'm so delighted with my 2008, I think it is, model, that it would take really getting a free one in the mail from the makers, Konami, I believe, of Pro Evo. Maybe say five.
Purveyors of fine, fine video games.
Right.
I don't play either, I like to stress.
So you need a console as well?
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah, well, I'd like to start. I don't play video games, so.
No.
But yeah, if I had a good console from a reputable manufacturer,
right,
then I'm sure I could get into it and sort of plug their products.
It's a heartwarming story, Barry. There you go. Formica Atomica wants to know about Christian Vieri accusing Inter of masterminding the whole Calciopoli scandal so that they could be the dominant force in Italy. This is the big thing that Juve fans are always saying. We never did it. We were framed by Inter, who have committed the perfect crime by getting us to pay the penalty for their robbery of titles. But interestingly enough, whilst people are beginning to forget about the original sentences and all the charges that came up, the actual police case, the actual civil case that has come about because of all the wiretaps is going on at the moment. And there was some great testimony by one of the people who used to fix the balls with which they would draw. They had a random, you know, bingo ball scenario for drawing which referee got which game. And the bloke who used to actually fix the balls spoke up at the court case last week and said, yeah, well, here's basically what we did. So I think the idea that Juve, or that the whole thing wasn't completely fixed and that Juve didn't have a major hand in it is a bit of a fairy tale. That's my
opinion. Maybe that just proves that fans of the big four in England aren't the only ones who are completely paranoid and deluded.
Hmm. Indeed so. Now, time for romance, John Ashton. Time for the FA Cup.
Indeed, yeah.
Where have you been?
Well, on Saturday I was at Poulton Rovers against Norwich. Poulton Rovers of the Zamoretto League, Division 1 South and West.
Zamoretto League.
Yeah, it's the 121 places I think I counted between themselves and Norwich.
What tier is that?
It's the eighth tier,
eighth
I think.
Eighth tier?
Yeah. So a couple of stages below the conference. And they got battered 7-0. Which was a bit of a shame, but the gulf was just too big. But it was a really, it was a tremendous story. It is a tiny village in the middle of Somerset, a few miles outside of Bath. Little ground, everybody ever so friendly. The manager did his post-match press conferences, swigging from a can of cider in between questions. And it was, you know, the fans didn't seem to mind too much. It was more about the occasion than it was about the result, which is a good job, I suppose.
Right, okay. And they'll be playing Lincoln in round two.
No, you've got, this is Northwich, where I was at.
Oh, that's Norwich, right, okay.
Yesterday, Norwich and Northwich, close together.
Right.
Yesterday, Northwich pulled off the shock of the round by beating Charlton up at the Victoria Stadium. And they didn't just beat them, they absolutely battered them. And Northwich of the Blue Square North, which is one tier below the conference.
That's the fifth tier?
The sixth tier.
Sixth tier, right.
Yeah. And Norwich.
Any butchers or bakers involved?
No, well, the majority were professional at that level, although the goal scorer, Wayne Riley, is part-time player at the club, and when he's not playing football, he works in a pub down the road, pulling pints.
Barry?
I think I speak on behalf of all our listeners. If John Ashdown and romance are being mentioned, we need to ask how the alphabet dating is going. What letter are you on, and what have you done since we last spoke to you?
It's been going quite slowly, because it's my turn now, so we're on to G. Right. I think we might have been up to E last
what
time.
What was F? Because, we didn't have it.
F, we had a fright night.
What did that involve?
Well, it involved going to Oxford Castle in Oxford.
And is that traditionally a haunted venue?
It is, yeah. It's very, very haunted. And we were there taken around. So we stayed the night, effectively, until about 5 o'clock in the morning, where we were taken around by a medium who kept seeing ghostly figures. Mm-hmm. And everybody else was just a bit cold and wet because it was a castle in the middle of the night.
Right.
It wasn't great, to be honest. So I haven't got much to live up to with my G. But any suggestions?
That was her suggestion.
That was her suggestion.
G, yeah. What are you thinking?
I've got a bit of a blank spot with it. So any suggestions, welcomed.
Gay disco.
That could work. Yeah. My girlfriend and I kissed for the very first time at a gay disco.
All right.
okay. Too much information.
Right. No, fantastic.
Did she think you were a really butch lesbian?
Possibly, yeah. She was very drunk.
Maybe right. She still does. You could pass as
I would have to be a very butch lesbian, surely.
You have the shaved head and the glasses.
In the meantime, Steve Staunton's Darlington. Interesting. They lost 3-1 at Barnet. They're out of the cup as a result. They're bottom of League 2, 6 points adrift. Their goal difference is minus 19. Steve Staunton, who'd have thought? Things not working out for him there at Darlington.
He's not been there for very long, has he? And he's going to...
Long enough, by the sound.
Well, they were in pretty dire straits when he took over there. I think they were down to something like 12 professionals in the summer.
Oh, really?
And they've had a bit of a mare. Mm. He's not... Is he the person you'd want to guide you back to the glory days? Probably not.
Anything else we should know about the FA Cup this weekend?
One thing I ought to mention is just how friendly the people were at both Poulton and Northwich. Yesterday, Northwich, even after the game, the five national journalists that were there were wandering around trying to find somewhere quiet and warm to type up our reports.
Sergio Aguero's shorts?
Well, we could have done with them, yeah. A giant pair. But in the end, we found the only place we found was the chairman's suite at the end of a long corridor. And we all sat in there. And after sort of 10 minutes, the chairman came in to find us eating his sandwiches and borrowing his chairs. And instead of sort of, you know, throwing us out, he offered to get us all a cup of tea.
Oh.
It was brilliant.
Fantastic stuff.
Don't get that then, Premier League.
You certainly don't. In the Championship meantime, plenty to talk about. Newcastle won at their exciting new sportsdirect.com at St James's Park Stadium. Lots of chance of Ashley out during this one. They beat Peterborough, the bottom side in the Championship, 3-1. Peterborough being bottom means, of course, that Ipswich are no longer bottom. They drew 1-1 at Reading. It's exciting, isn't it?
It's really exciting.
Yeah, what else have we got? South Wales derby. It was a cracker.
Five goals, yes. Yep. It was a very good game.
Swansea beat Cardiff, lovely. Middlesbrough, things working out pretty well for them since they got rid of that loser Gareth Southgate. They were second at the time. They've raced up to 10th now in the Championship, and they haven't scored a goal or got any points since Gordon Strachan took charge. That's it, I believe. League One, should we mention them? Leeds, doing well?
They are, yeah. Well, obviously, the League One and League Two had a rest over the weekend because of the FA Cup. So
I knew that.
Yeah, it's sort of slightly... It's the same as it was last week.
But right. Leeds beat Oldham in the FA Cup to progress to the next round. And am I right in thinking, are they still in the Carling Cup as well?
No,
they're not. So.
But that's the tie of the second round. Kettering Leeds is the tie of the second round in the FA Cup.
Hmm.
That'll be the one on ITV.
Producer Ben reckons that for the linguistically interesting... bollocks, it's not that interesting, Ben. Northampton against Southampton. I think you'd be better off with the Battle of the Ampersand in round two. Brighton and Hove Albion against Rushton and Diamonds. It's a kind of four-hander affair, that one. Yeah. It's like tag football or something.
I think Staines at home to either Millwall or AFC Wimbledon, who play this evening, should be a rather intriguing...
Barry, care to make a joke about Staines at home or not?
No, thank you.
All right. Super duper. Well, many, many thanks then for joining us today on Football Weekly. And best of luck with the letter G, John Ashdown. And James Dart, with you, whatever you might be getting up to.
Thank you.
Magnificent stuff today. And Barry, you as well. Terrific. And producer Ben, you at home, etc., 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 mum and dad. And we'll be back on Thursday with Football Weekly Extra, so hopefully you'll be joining us then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.